Everybody, the very end of Parshas Beshalach, we read about the story of Milchemes Amalek, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah picks up on this story. But one of the important psukim that we read is the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was in some way leading the war. He was not actually out in battle, but he was leading the war from afar. And we're told, Bidei Moshe Kevedim, the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu were heavy. Vayikhu Evan Vayasimu Tachtav, and they took a stone and they put it underneath Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayeshev Alea, and he sits down on this stone. Ve'aron v'chur tamchu biyadav, and Aaron and Chur were on either side of Moshe Rabbeinu, supporting his arms. Mizeachad u'mizeachad, vayihi yadav emunah ad bo Hashemes. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah picks up on that. V'chiyadav shal Moshe osos melchama oshovers melchama. Do you think Moshe Rabbeinu's arms are what made the Jewish people successful in battle, or what made them fail in battle? That cannot be. So the Gemara has a whole explanation about that. But Rashi on our Parsha writes, why is it that they took an Evan vayasimu tachtav? So Rashi says, v'lo yashav lo al kar v'keses. Rashi says, Moshe Rabbeinu chose not to sit on a pillow, not to sit on a comfortable couch. Amar, because he said, Yisrael shurim b'tzar, if the Jewish people are out there in the trenches, the Jewish people are out there fighting a war, and they're staring death in the face, af ani eya imayim b'tzar, I have to feel the distress, I have to feel the pain of the Jews as well. And this is something that we find throughout the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu. Go back to the very introduction that we have of Moshe Rabbeinu onto the scene of Jewish history, where we're told that Moshe Rabbeinu was adopted by the family of Paro, and here he is living in royalty, and Moshe Rabbeinu could have sat his whole life and done just that. Moshe Rabbeinu could have had a wonderful life, but we're told, Vayetze, Vayar, Bisivlosam, he goes out from the palace, and he chooses to put himself into the situation of where the Jews were, and to have an understanding. Lios Meitzar Aleim, Rashi says, he had an understanding, he had the wherewithal to go out and to have the feeling of what it meant to be oppressed, even though he himself was not really being put through that situation. So the comment of Rashi on this week's Parsha is something that is in line with Moshe Rabbeinu's general attitude, but really it's not Rashi's Chiddush. This is something that the Gemara in Maseches Tainus, Daf Yud Aleph, already teaches us. And the Gemara says, La'olam yitzar adam im hatzibur. A person always has to try and feel the pain of the tzibur. And I take the very good criticism that somebody in the shul gave me last week. And I took it very much to heart, and I think he's correct. He's correct and he's incorrect. He's correct in the fact that when I gave a drasha last week, he said, you gave a horrible drasha. I said, why? He said, because you should have spoken about something that happened this past week, and how could it be that every rabbi in this shul didn't even mention it in their drushas? I said, I didn't even know what happened this week. So he's wrong because I didn't even know what happened. He's right because I should have known what happened. So what happened? He had told me that on Thursday afternoon last week, there was a Jew who was killed, a father of six children who was killed in Eretz Yisrael in some terrorist attack. Shabbos came around. It was a busy week. I didn't even know anything about it. I hadn't heard anything about it. He said, how did you miss it? How could it be? So he's right. How could it be that we live in America and we don't even know, and we don't even bother to mention about the fact that there's a father of six children who now don't have a father anymore, who the family's suffering so much? We don't even mention it. We don't even take it to heart. It doesn't bother us at all. So he's correct in that fact, and that's what the Gemara says. La'olam yitzar adam al hatzibur. A person can feel, here I am living in America, and I'm safe, and I'm not fighting the battle, and everything's okay with me, and when I go to visit Eretz Yisrael, I don't go to the dangerous places, and shalom alai nafshi, everything's going to be fine with me. But Rashi says, no, that is not the attitude. The Gemara tells us we have to feel the pain, and we have to understand that when other people are going through suffering and difficult times, we have to make sure that we afflict ourselves as well. How do we know such a case? How do we know this is the way we're supposed to feel? Says the Gemara, Shekei Matzina b'Moshe Rabbeinu. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu himself in our Parsha, Tzir Atzmo Im Hatzibur, Moshe Rabbeinu made sure to feel that which the community was feeling. Ask the Gemara, do you think Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, you see the Hasidish Rebbes go traveling in Europe, and before they come into a room, they have the special chair is put down, and the special couch for them, and the special blanket is brought for them, everything is brought. You think Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have one follower, one person who was willing to put out a comfortable table, a comfortable chair for him? Says the Gemara, of course he had people who could do it, but Moshe Rabbeinu said, Ho v'Yisrael n'shuyim b'tzar, af ani eya imahem b'tzar. Says the Gemara, we learn from Moshe Rabbeinu, this always needs to be the attitude, this always needs to be the feeling that we have, even if personally I'm not the one going through the tragedy, but I need to feel the pain of other people. And so much so that the Gemara tells us, Kala mitzayr atzmo im hatzibur. If you are a person who is able to feel the pain of others, zoche v'ro bin achamas hatzibur, you will also be included in the great blessings, in the great nechama that the tzibur is granted as well. And the Gemara goes so far as to say, this is not just an attitude that one has to have in their heart. It's not just a feeling they're supposed to feel. It's not just a thought they're supposed to think. It's not just something they're supposed to talk about. But the Gemara says also that we have practical applications of this as well. So much so that the Gemara says, "Aser la'adam l'shamash mitasa b'shnei ra'avon." If there is a famine going on in the world, and I happen to be from the wealthy families who's not suffering from the famine at all, my family has enough to last us for a long time, but the whole community is suffering, says the Gemara, "Aser la'adam l'shamash mitasa b'shnei ra'avon." One is not allowed to go and have tashmish amita. One is not allowed to be with his or her husband or wife during that time. How do we know? Because we see by Yosef HaTzadik that Pasuk says, "Uli Yosef yulad shnei banim." Yosef HaTzadik has two children in Mitzrayim. Biterem tavo shnas ra'av, before the years of famine came about. Why is it important for us to know when his wife conceived and when they had the baby? Whose business is that? Says the Torah, no. It's very important to know that throughout all those years, even though Yosef was living in the palace and he was safe and he was taken care of, but he knew that it's inappropriate for him at a time when his whole country is suffering. You do not go ahead and procreate. This is not the right time for it. And this is something we find already by Noach, where we're told that Noach goes into the Teva with his sons. What, Noach was so frum, they couldn't have a husband and wife going in holding hands together? You don't think Noach was scared? You don't think his wife was nervous? Why didn't he go in together? Says Rashi on Chumash, the reason why Noach went separately with his sons and his wife went separately with the daughters-in-law is because Noach understood this is not a time for us to show our affection for each other. This is not a time for us to have tashmish amita and to have a close relationship with one another. This is a time when the world is about to be destroyed. Our minds are not allowed to be on that. Our minds have to be on the terrible destruction that's in front of us. And the Gemara goes further and says that a person who is pirish echad mehem, a person who sees that there's a communal tzara going on, and you choose that you're not going to pay attention to it, you choose that you're going to turn a blind eye to it, ba'in shnei malachei hashari shemalavin lo da'adam, says the Gemara, two malachim come, whatever this means, umanichin lo yedeim al rosho, and they place their hands on this person, ve'omrim, and they say, ploni zeh shepirish minatzibur, this person who doesn't bother to be affected by that, what's going on with the community, al yira ben achamas hatzibur. When the tzibur ends up having the great nechama and the great Yeshua, this individual is going to be left behind as well. If you cannot include yourself in that which is going on in the bad times of Klal Yisrael, then you also don't deserve to be a part of the good times of Klal Yisrael. And this is a very important lesson that we learn from the lifetime of Moshe Rabbeinu and from the psukim in the end of our parsha. So I saw in the biography of the Panavizhe Rav, they have a story, the great Panavizhe Rav, who was such a tzaddik on his own right. So when he was a young child, he learned in the Telzer Yeshiva in Europe. And they write the story in his biography that at some point he decided that it was time for him to move on from the Telzer Yeshiva to go learn in Navardik. I don't know why he decided to, but that was the plan. So on his way, he had to take a train, but he had a stopover in Radin along the way. And he figured, well, the great Chafetz Chaim is alive and I may as well go and have a chance to meet the Chafetz Chaim and get a bracha from him on my way to Navardik. So he stops off in Radin and he asks somebody how to get to the house of the Chafetz Chaim. And they direct him there. He comes into the house and the Chafetz Chaim wife very graciously welcomes him into the home. And he says, you know, I'm just the yeshiva bachur. I happen to be passing through the neighborhood. I was wondering if I can have a few minutes with the Chafetz Chaim just to get a bracha on my way. And she says, absolutely, you'll be in a few minutes. Please sit down. She offers him something to drink. And he's sitting there, he's nervous, when's the Chafetz Chaim going to come? And all of a sudden he hears the Chafetz Chaim is shouting and howling in the room next door. And he jumps up from his seat, he's nervous, maybe the Chafetz Chaim is having a heart attack, maybe he fell down the steps, maybe something happened. And he sees that the Chafetz Chaim's wife is calm and composed and nothing's bothering her at all. And he says to her, are you not concerned? Maybe something happened to your husband? Maybe you should go check on him? And she says, no, this is normal, everything's fine, he'll be in a few minutes. And he finally musters up the courage to ask the wife of the Chafetz Chaim, what do you mean this is normal? What's going on? And she says, there's a woman who came to see him in the other room, and this woman is in labor, and she's having a very difficult labor. And the Chafetz Chaim is crying in pain over the labor that this woman is having, that everything should be okay and the child should be healthy. And Rav Kahaneman said at that time, if you can have a person who is able to feel the pain of a woman in labor, if you can have a person who is able to feel and understand how difficult it is for a woman to go through that, so much so that I almost felt he must have fallen down a flight of stairs, he said, I'm stopping my trip and I'm going to stay here to learn by such a person. I don't care how much he might know, how much he doesn't know, how great a Talmud Chacham is, how little a Talmud Chacham he is. This is the person that I'm supposed to learn from, and he ended up staying. He ended up becoming the great Talmud, the great disciple of the Chafetz Chaim, all as a result of that one story, of that one encounter that he had on his way to go somewhere else. And the story is told also in the Sefer, that is the biography, not of the Panavizhe Rav, but of the Chafetz Chaim himself. They tell about during the years of the First World War, how the Chafetz Chaim was so careful about how much he enjoyed life. Now you can imagine the Chafetz Chaim didn't have any money himself and he didn't really have any furniture in his home, so there's not that much enjoyment that he had in life anyway. But it's told there by the students of the Chafetz Chaim that he was so careful and so measured every movement that he did during those years of World War I, so much so that they tell the story there that the wife of the Chafetz Chaim wakes up one night and she sees that in the middle of the night, the bed next to her is empty, and she's wondering what happened to her husband, and she runs out of the room in a frenzy, wondering what happened to him. And she sees that he's sleeping on a bench right outside of the house in the freezing cold with some hay under his head. And she goes and she wakes him up and asks him, what's going on here? And he says to her, I don't understand what your question is. When we have Jews who are homeless, when we have Jews who are refugees, when we have Jews who have nothing to eat and are starving, when we have young Jewish men and a community all around us who is fighting a battle, who is staring death in the face, you think I'm going to be able to just go to sleep on a bed and go to sleep for the night and lock the door and say everything is fine? I'm going to feel the same pain. If they're in the trenches, I also have to be in the trenches. So yes, I'm 90 years old or I'm 80 years old and I cannot fight the battle myself, but I'm at least going to feel the pain of those who are out there on the front lines. And this is a similar story told in the Sefer Uvdos. Is it in Uvdos van Hagos LeBeis Brisk? I don't know. It's one of the biographies of the great Reb Chaim Brisker, where they say the story about there was a great fire that broke out in the community of Brisk, and he was the Rav of the town. And it's told that Reb Chaim spent so much time and energy trying to do whatever he can to raise money and to do whatever was necessary for those members of the community who didn't have a house. And it is told that although Reb Chaim was an old man, and although he was the most respected and distinguished personality of the community, all of those months, all of those, I don't know how long the time period was that people were out of a home because of this great fire that took place, it is told that Reb Chaim himself, all of those months, decided that he was going to sleep in the shul on the floor, because he said, if we have Jews who don't have a roof over their heads, I cannot bring myself to sleep in a room that has a roof over its head. I'm going to sleep on the floor of the shul together with everybody else who's homeless, and I'm going to put myself in it together with them. So there's an amazing story that I once read about the Taz. The Taz lived in the Gzeres Tachvatat, which happened to the Jews in Ukraine in 1648, 1649. I once saw somebody write Tachvatat, Tav Chaf, Tav Tes. That is obviously not correct. Tachvatat is Tav Ches and Tav Tes. Those were 2 years in a row of terrible suffering, the Khmelnytsky riots that took place in Russia. So the story is told that the great leader of the generation was the Taz, Rabbeinu David, and he decided that the Jews are suffering so much with the Gzeres Tachvatat, so he's going to do his part to try and alleviate the suffering of the Jews. How can he alleviate the suffering of the Jews? What's he going to do single-handedly? So the Taz said, maybe if I go into Galus, if I just throw my whole reputation out the window and give up on all my covenant and all my great positions that I have and all the things that I'm doing, if I go into Galus and I put myself through suffering and I leave everything behind, maybe God will have Rachmanis on the Jewish community and he'll say, the Taz is suffering enough and that's enough to take the burden of the Jewish community that is suffering in his stead. So that's what he decided to do, and he made a deal with his family. No one's ever allowed to say where he is. No one's allowed to say who he is. He's going to run away. He's going to go into Galus, and maybe he'll take away the suffering from the Jews of his generation. So that's what he does. He goes to a community, sits in the back of the shul, where they had a place that was designated for all the aniyim. And they used to sit in the back of the shul, and if anyone had a few extra crumbs after dinner at night, they would come and drop it off there. So he's sitting there with everybody else, totally embarrassing himself, and didn't know a person there, and somebody walks into the shul and notices that must be the Taz. He looks familiar. This guy was one of his Talmidim. He walks over, he gets a closer look, and he sees it is the Taz. And he turns to him and he says, Rebbe, what are you doing here? And the Taz says, I make you promise to me you're never going to tell anybody in this town who I am. I took Gullus upon myself. You're never allowed to tell anybody why I'm here or what's the reason that you found me here. We're going to keep this as a secret between us. This is what I'm doing, and I don't allow you to share the secret with anybody else. So that's what it was. After a couple of days went by, he just couldn't hold himself back. How can I watch my Rebbe like this? He has no money, he has no place to stay, he has no place to eat, no place to do anything. He says, you know what, maybe we'll get you a job at the community. What job is he going to get him? He says, why don't you go work in the Schlachthaus? Why don't you go work in the Shechita house? And they always needed someone to look through the Nikur, to take out the parts of the animal that were not edible for the Jews. So he told the Taz, you know, maybe we'll get you a job there. The Schlachthaus was very happy to hire another person. Taz takes the job, they didn't say who it was. And he's doing his job. After a couple of weeks there, people came to realize that this guy really knows what he's talking about. He knows how to do everything properly. And they started, instead of going to the rabbi to ask the shilas on the treifa chickens, they started going to the Taz to ask the questions on the treifa chickens. And the Taz was such a great Talmud Chacham, he was able to be mekel on so many of the cases, when in the past, the rabbi was always a big machmir on all the cases. So it became more and more popular to go ask the Taz the shilas, until it came to a point where the rabbi realized, hey, nobody's asking me questions anymore. And he starts asking around what's going on. And they told him, well, you know, there's this guy who started working in the Shechita house, and he really, he knows how to be Mekel for us, and it's a Hepsed Merubah. So the rabbi got so angry, and he comes to the shita house, and he says, he puts him in cheirem, and he slaps him on the face, and he says, how dare you go ahead and think that you're allowed to serve everybody nevelus atreifas, what do you know? And he says, you have to sit, you're not even allowed to take a seat inside of the shul. Whenever you want to come daven with us, you have to sit outside of the shul, and everybody who passes by has to say, bepem mole, that you're the one who served them nevelus atreifas, you're the one that served them the food that wasn't kosher, and we're going to be mevazi you for the terrible thing that you did. So that's what he does. He goes along with the plan, and the Taz sits outside of the shul, and everybody's screaming at him and spitting in his face and yelling at him and slapping him on the way. And the Taz is putting up with all this, never says who he is. One fine day, the Taz hears that there's a young woman who goes into the rabbi's office to ask him a shaila, and she hears that after the woman walks out, the woman was crying. And he turns to the young girl and he says, why are you crying so profusely? What happened? And the woman says to him, well, I'll tell you the truth. You know, my mother saved up money. She's an almana. We don't have a father. We don't have any money. We saved up money in order to buy this chicken. And it was everything we had. And it was going to last us for the week or for the month, whatever it was going to be. And she says, now, we went in to ask the rabbi a shaila, and the rabbi said, it's treif, and now we have to get rid of it. The Taz says, show it to me. She says, I can't show it to you. The rabbi made me promise on the way out, I dare not say a word to that guy outside of the shul, because he knew what was going to happen. So she says, look, I can't. He says, show it to me. He takes the chicken, he looks at it, he says, go back and tell the rabbi that if he looks in the Taz in Yeredeya, there's a reason why it's mutter, and he shouldn't say that this chicken is treif. She goes back into the rabbi, she says, I was told that you should look into the Taz in Yeredeya, and this in the Siman, and you'll see that the psak that you gave is incorrect. The rabbi is so stunned, he says, who told you that? She says, I can't tell you who said it. She didn't want to know, she didn't want to say anything, she didn't want to disclose. After all, the rabbi said, you're not allowed to talk to this guy. Finally, she tells him, the guy outside told me to look. He looks in the Taz and he sees he was wrong. He sees that he made a mistake, and the Taz was makel in this case. And the rabbi said, you're right, the animal is kosher. He goes outside and he says, who are you? So he says, I am the Taz. And the rabbi almost faints. And when he puts himself back together, he says to him, you know, he starts asking mechila, he can't believe what he did to him. And he asks the Taz, you know, you were here all this time and you never said who you were, and you made me put you through all this terrible bizyonis and you never disclosed the information. And the Taz said, look, what I do to myself is one thing, and I did it for the tzaras of the Jewish people. When I hear an almana and a young woman who's crying, that's something I'm willing to give up all of my dreams for. Yes, it's true, I made people promise they'll never say who I am. And yes, it's true, I decided, I made a personal decision, I'm going to stay in this town and this is what it's going to be. But if it's at the expense of one almana or one yisum who's crying, and they're going to lose as a result of something that I'm doing and disclosing my own private chumra to myself, I cannot handle that. And for that, he said, I'm willing to give up everything, and I'll tell you exactly who I am. And whatever the fallout is going to be, it's going to be, because that is something that a great leader of the Jewish people is never able to handle. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us in our parsha. That's what all the great leaders of our people have taught us throughout all the millennia, that if a person wants to really have an understanding of what it means to lead the Jewish people, it means you have to have an understanding of the pain of the Jewish people, and you have to put yourself into that circumstance. And that's where the Gemara assures us, somebody who makes sure to be a part of the Tzaras Yisrael is also going to make sure in the end to be a part of the Nachamas Yisrael as well.